All in the Game. Welcome, I'm Connor Phillips and I'm joined to talk all things football with Paul Manning from the City of Liverpool Football Club, also Neil Sang, football agent and general, football supporter, and Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap as well. So gents, first of all, you're very welcome, and if my two men to my right hand side, Neil Sang and Neil Atkinson, will allow me to welcome a new guest to the panel, and a man who's been on the show a few times. He's been on the phone, he's talked to me about the City of Liverpool Football Club. Paul Manning, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Thanks, Connor. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem at all. Listen, come a wee bit closer to that microphone there.
Sure.
And let me see. Talk me through exactly what happens with the City of Liverpool Football Club and why you are now 4 from 4, a newly founded football club, 100% record.
Well, we're 4 from 4 because we got the right manager in fairness. We took our time at the early part of this year with a full-on recruitment process to try and get the right team in place, and we were looking for specific expertise of getting out of this division of what was the North West Counties League and is now the Hallmarks Authority League. We had about, I think we had about 23 applicants, and we boiled that down to 5 interviews, and Simon Burton, who we eventually did take on for the job, just stood out like a sore thumb, and at the moment he's proven our decision right, and long may it continue.
For what reason? What reasons, Paul? Tell us, why did he stand out? Because this fascinates me, the leadership part of football fascinates me, because there's loads of dinosaurs in the game.
Yeah.
So fascinating what you saw.
Well, what we were looking for, as I say, Neil, in the first place was direct experience of either winning or getting promoted out of the division, which we're now playing in the first division of the Hallmark Security League. So from a CV point of view, Simon had that straight away. One season in the first division, bang, and he was out, and he was up into the Premier League. So fair enough, that stood out. There was also 2 other applicants who had the same thing on the CV.
Mm.
But Simon then, from a CV point of view, he also had then a successful following 5 or 6 years right at the top of the Premier Division. I don't think he was ever out of the top 5 with Runcorn Town, which was his club then. He'd come very close twice to winning the Premier Division, which, for anyone who doesn't know, that's a massive bottleneck in throughout non-league football.
Yeah.
Step 5 up to step 4, there's only ever one team promoted. So he had the CV. One or two others had the CV, as I say, but Simon just came across as honest. He had integrity.
And he's doing a particularly good job at the minute, 4 from 4. Right, tell you what, we will chat at length about the City of Liverpool Football Club, because it fascinates me as well. Just after 6 o'clock, we'll get a good lengthy discussion as to how we can get down there, how we can support the lads as well, and how we can make this a truly all-encompassing team. Reds, blues, whites, everybody in the middle down supporting the City of Liverpool Football Club. Now, first of all, let's have a quick look at Everton's weekend. This was an Everton side who won 2-1 against West Brom. They went 1-0 down, Gareth McCauley scoring after 6 minutes, but then getting back into it through Morelos and eventually winning the game with a Gareth Barry header at the back post. Who would have thought it? First of all, Neil from the Anfield Wrap, looking on as a Liverpool fan, it does look like Koeman is putting the right shapes in the right holes at the moment.
Yeah, he's doing a good job. I think he's come in. I think there's a little bit of new manager bounce that he's getting, I think it's fair to say, and I think that's a good thing, and it's down to him to ride that wave, and I think he will. I think there's no getting away from the fact that he knows what he's doing, but it's more than that. It's that these Everton players were better than the way they finished the season last season, and I don't just mean a bit better, I mean significantly better. You mentioned Gareth Barry there, and there'll still be question marks about whether or not he can do 38 games or 34, allowing for his suspensions through getting booked, but he's still a terrific footballer. I mean, he really is. He's one of the cleverest players, one of the cleverest English players, I think, in the last 20 years, and I think he's a very, very, very good player, and he's going to remain one. As I say, how many miles Everton can get out of him is up in the air, and I think you go right the way through that side. You know, Everton's problem at the moment isn't whether or not they can get 11 good players out. It's what happens when the season begins to take its toll, knocks, injuries, and that's where they've still got to look to strengthen. Because in Barkley, they've still got, you know, I thought he showed it, a really exciting footballer who's getting better and better at bringing people into the game, and I think that's one of the key things, and why he must be a joy to work with for everyone he's working with at the moment at Goodison. You saw the big move to bring Lukaku on there in that game as well. I mean, I've only seen the highlights, but it's a big move to make that sort of change when he does. But he's doing that partially because firstly, it's the sort of thing you can get away with when you're a new manager. Secondly, it actually lays the groundwork for, well, I'm prepared to do this sort of thing, boys, and I think that's a good message to send to a dressing room as well. I've got this in my back pocket, and don't think I'm not prepared to do it. So I think across the board, there's loads and loads of reasons to be optimistic for Evertonians at the moment. I think that another couple of signings required, but they look in great shape.
Just a question on the couple of signings, Sangi. What do you think? Is there any rumours, anyone saying anything apart from potentially Joe Hart maybe going on loan? That's what everyone's sort of whispering about. Do you think Everton are done in the transfer market yet?
I think he's going to bring one or two more, and I think he has to, Connor, against strength of depth. I think there's a lot of Premier League sides who have got a good 11, maybe even a really good 13, 14, I think. But as the season progresses, and as soon as that window slams shut, you're looking around thinking, I've got these 18 or 19 or 20, and maybe my strength and depth isn't great. I think Everton's is getting better, and I think it needs to be even stronger. They've got a smattering of great young talent as well to always throw in there, and that was... That was a big fill-up for the fans at the end of last year.
That's a surprising thing. Today we learned that Brendan Galloway is on loan, is going on loan to West Brom, which kind of baffled me a bit because I do think they need a bit of strength and depth in defence. Paul from the City of Liverpool Football Club, just on that, on young players and trying to spot something, is that something that yous have been trying to do or have done at the start, this new entity, City of Liverpool Football Club? Is it easy to spot good talent?
Well, Neil will answer that more than me, but at the moment we're looking to put an experienced team on the field. Some of them are young, some of them are older. But it is definitely one of the key aims of the club for young scouts talent to be coming through and to be given an opportunity. People who maybe bounce back out of an academy or two and then are just sort of messing around, you know, underneath professional level. Scouts, footballers travel all across the country to play for teams outside of the area. And it was one of the major things that we were focused on when we formed the club. Why should they have to travel? And now that the lads have seen us actually playing and performing and doing well, we're now getting, we're now attracting lads and saying, they're saying to us, can I come along? Can I have a trial? Can I do this? Can I do that? And the answer to all of it is yeah.
We need to get some, I think, Liverpool or Everton players down to a match. We need to get them down to a match and actually watching you play. I think it'd be a proper fill-up. So if you're listening, just a good chance of Liverpool / Everton footballers are listening on their way home from training. Well, it's at 5:10, they're home from training hours ago. Let's not kid ourselves in that respect. So having a look at the Everton performance, a 2-1 win. Lads, to all of you, I don't think Everton last season going 1-0 down away early on in the season would have bounced back and won 2-1. What do you reckon?
No, I think, I'll jump in on that one. I think Roberto Martinez was very sort of stoic in his thoughts of, no, we stay as we are. And as Neil alluded to before, he said the strength to change something that's not working early on is for me, is management. You can do all the preparation you want, and I say this all the time, all the preparation you want in the world, and you can believe you know how West Brom are going to go and play. But you actually truly don't know. They could be working on their plan B or their plan C or their Everton plan. You have no clue how they're going to go. So you can set up as you think is going to win the game based on all the opposition scouting analysis that you've had from the last 12 months or however long, and all the stuff you know on Pulis. As soon as you get there, you don't really truly know. So for me, it's strength to go and change that. So arguably they wouldn't have won that game under Martinez. So, great news for the Evertonians to see the Coombs making them big decisions.
In the second half of last season, they could barely be bothered passing to each other. So, I think that, you know, in the second half of the season, then, no, I don't think there's any way they would. First half might have been a little bit different. But I think it's more, if you're an Evertonian, also be as pleased about the fact that they see out the 2-1. As not just that they get from 1-0 to 2-1.
Because there's half an hour to go, isn't there, when they score?
They don't just get from 1-0 to 2-1, but they're in an opponent's ground, they're away from home, and how many leads did you see them throw away last season? Really good leads. They get themselves, they see that match out, and they see it out again. As I say, I've got to be honest, I only saw the highlights, so I've got no sense if West Brom are turning the screw. But it didn't look as though there was, even like the previous week against Spurs, it didn't look as though there was fantastic saves from the goalkeeper hanging on to those 3 points. It looked to me like Everton were about as in control as you can be at the Hawthorns, given the way in which they play football. They just saw the game out. They just rode it down until there was 90 minutes on the clock, and thank you very much to take the 3 points. It's a good 3 points.
Yeah, Joe Hart is in the news today, potentially, that he could miss out in some England action because he's not playing first team for Manchester City. I'm sure him at sort of 27, 28 years of age, he should be in the prime of his footballing life. Paul, do you think Joe Hart at Everton, do you think it's going to happen? Do you think it would work?
I haven't got a clue, to be honest, but it clearly would work because he is one of the top goalies in the country, one of the top goalies in the Premier League. He's going through a run of maybe confidence is affected after the performances towards the end of the Man City season last year. I know he got dropped a couple of times for City last year, but he's a top goalkeeper, and he'd help any Premier League club, I think, Everton and Liverpool included.
Are now Everton the type of team who can start thinking about players like Joe Hart? No disrespect to Everton last season, but like you said there, now towards the tail end of last season, they couldn't get any results, just couldn't get anything to happen for them, and you get the feeling that people then started to see them again as a small club mentality. Now they've brought in players like Bolasie, and the fact that Lukaku is there, is Joe Hart a natural fit to Everton, and have they moved that step up that they can openly say, yeah, you can come to us, you could be an Everton player, and it's going to do your international career no harm at all?
Well, I mean, Gareth Barry went on loan to Everton 3 seasons ago, and I was at 13-14, he went on loan to Everton, so it's not in any way outrageous that Manchester City might loan Everton a footballer. I think one of the key things, though, is that Everton could afford to pay Joe Hart's wages, which are not inconsiderable, given the fact that the way in which the spending's gone so far, and with the TV money and all that sort of thing. So I think from that point of view, they may be a little bit stronger, but I think Everton, you know, as I say, they could have expected to pick up the Gareth Barry move that they do and all that sort of thing. I think there's a constant issue around Everton, which is that I don't think they should, nor should we, talk them down or talk themselves down. Everton are still, for me, one of the top 6 football teams in this country, you know, in terms of the history, in terms of the way in which they're supported, in terms of the breadth and depth and worldwide nature of the supporter base. So, you know, Everton should walk that particular walk, and I bore people senseless around this time of every season on this slot, saying that Everton should be swaggering around the place, saying we're Everton Football Club and we're not messing about. So Joe Hart, yeah, but Joe Hart should be the tip of the iceberg, to be honest with you. You know, I think Everton should have the attitude that we're more than capable of putting a proper season in, of finishing top 6 as a minimum, and going from there. It'd be really, really hard. But then, you know, West Ham are walking around thinking and making those sorts of noises, and, you know, there's no, if West Ham are able to conduct themselves in that particular manner, then Everton Football Club should be.
And when you look at what's available, and we're talking about depth as we head towards the transfer window closing, 3 top quality goalkeepers is what Koeman said he wanted. Difficult to get 3 top quality goalkeepers, but by all reports, Stekelenburg has picked 4 points up for Everton in 2 games because of his performances.
And again, that's the other thing, isn't it? It's how does he feel if Joe Hart comes in and suddenly is bestowed the number 1 position?
How does Robles feel at the moment? Like, because he came to the fore at the end of last
season.
Seems
no one cares about him.
He's just literally
no one's bothered.
But that's football at the top level, though, isn't it? Yeah. Once you're out and someone else is in doing your job for you, and you've got to live with that.
So, percentage-wise, Hart to Everton?
50-50.
30%.
30%.
I haven't got a clue.
I just think the wages
probably
for me.
The most sensible answer there, Paul.
For me, the fit for me, the part of my 50% is the fit. That is, he doesn't have to move home. He'll know the club well. It's a good fit. There's English lads or England team players in the Everton camp. So there's the 50% that thinks a fit. The other part that I don't is that I think he said in the past he wouldn't mind playing abroad, and there is interest. The other thing is, as well, I just wonder whether Everton look at his wages, and I've seen different reports of 135, 140 grand a week, up to 160 grand a week. If Everton do that, the worry is that other players go, okay, so if he comes for a year, forget it's a year, and forget you haven't paid any money for them other than a loan fee, which might be 2 or 3 or 4 million quid. All in, that's maybe a 10, 11 million pound season for a goalkeeper. And I think fans maybe missed that the loan fees that are charged are really, really, really high at times.
We never hear about them,
and you never, because it's just done. It's just done, and nobody ever classes it as anything significant. When in fact, when you sign an England player on loan, you'll be paying several million, maybe up to £5 million for his loan. So as I said, take into account his salary, the loan fee, that might be a 10 or 11 million pound player for that season. My argument, and everyone goes back to, you've got to have a great number one. You've got to have great players from 1 to 11. Mm. It's not just about that. So my thing is, it comes down then to a value proposition. What's the value of £11 million on Joe Hart? Now, my opinion is, given what I'd seen last season for the biggest spenders in the country, wasn't great. In an England shirt, wasn't great. Am I going to, if I'm the guy in charge of the purchasings at Everton, am I going to go and spend £11 million on Joe Hart? I'm not, personally, my opinion. Mm. I'm not. I'm going Stekelenburg, Robles. I love the two of you. You're great value. Stekelenburg, you're doing fantastic. You've been brilliant in the openers. You were great all pre-season. I'm going to give you your head, son. It's your share to lose. That's what I would do.
Do you think moving away to a different country would hamper his England chances? Because it's almost like watching rugby union. You know, when you move to a different country, you can't play for England. it's almost like that because there's not too many English players play on foreign soil. So I don't know. I'm kind
it's
of
weird. We don't travel well now. It's weird.
Why is that? And would Hart do a job somewhere else?
I think it's cultural to a certain extent because you're sort of, I think it's cultural sort of in an English sense, full stop. So it's football outside of national culture. But I think there is also a cultural aspect where no one does it, no one thinks anyone does it. But, you know, there are players who've done it. Beckham did it to success. Steve McManaman is an example of
Mark
someone who
Hughes,
really
Lineker.
Made it work. Mark Hughes, Lineker. So it has happened. And you know, Gareth Bale's currently making it work in Real Madrid. So there's examples of it working. I just think that we think that because it doesn't happen very often, either there's not the interest in the English player in that overseas, or you know, Vinny Samway's made it work, or there's not the interest from the players to go. But I think one of the major issues is that you can drop down a level in English football and earn more money than you can by going to a same level club in most places abroad.
Correct.
And that's
it's the
finances,
economics, isn't it? Yeah, because the Serie A and to an extent La Liga just cannot play the sort of wages that the Premier League can play. I realise Real Madrid and Barcelona can, but if you're playing for a team, Athletic Bilbao or any of the other also ran teams in the Liga, they're not being able to match English Premier League wages.
Right, we'd love your opinion on this. Folks, give us a shout. 01517 08 1059 is our number. You're listening to All in the Game on Radio City Talk, joined by Paul Manning from the City of Liverpool Football Club, Neil Sang, football agent and general football expert, and from the Anfield Wrap, Neil Atkinson joins me as well. Any questions, any comments, do feel free to give us a shout, and we'll be back with you straight after these.
This is Full Time Radio City Talk.
This is All in the Game across Merseyside. I'm Connor Phillips on Radio City Talk. It is 5:24, and I'm joined by Paul Manning from the City of Liverpool Football Club, football agent Neil Sang, and from the Anfield Wrap, Neil Atkinson joins me as well. So, gentlemen, it looks like this Romelu Lukaku situation has sorted itself out, potentially sorted itself out. It says, well, indeed, Koeman said that he knocked on my door and he said he wants to stay for another year. First of all, footballing agent Neil Sang, how likely is this to happen? And Lukaku, wages-wise, is he going to tip Everton up for a few quid here?
Well, here's the thing. Again, it's I can only give you an opinion on knowing all the facts or knowing the conversation. So just from what you've given me and what I've read myself, if he's knocked on the door and said, I think he's got 3 years left, I'll give you another year and then we'll talk. And then he says, but I want more money. You ain't getting a penny. The other thing, there's a ruling as well. If you sign a new deal within a season or after the first official ball is kicked, you have to add a year at least onto the end of it. So Everton, I think, would be loath to say, OK, we're delighted you're staying. Let's up your money to, you know, comparative to, I don't know, say a Chelsea top player, 150, 140 grand a week.
What's someone like Lukaku earning at Everton?
My belief is he'd be on 75 grand a week, something like that, 80 grand a week. That would be my belief. Again, we don't know, and we see the papers, I don't know how they know. But
he'd double that anywhere else, wouldn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you're looking at the likes of Raheem Sterling getting 180 to 200 grand a week, rumoured, at Man City. Well, Lukaku, in very, very high percentage terms of football fans and football people, would say that he would be a better asset to your club than Raheem Sterling. So you want parity as a player, don't you?
Paul Manning from City Liverpool Football Club. Is he going to do a Suarez here, give them that final year swan song to see what he can do at Everton, or do you suspect he's going to be out the exit door?
I don't think it's a Suarez situation, not that I know too much about it, but it just feels like he's given Koeman a chance. Maybe he didn't get on with Martinez, didn't like the style of play or whatever, I don't know, but Koeman's a top manager, he's come in and he's agreed to give Koeman another year. But I think it's really interesting what Neil's just said about the money side of things. You know, if Lukaku really is only on something like £75,000 a week, you know, he really should be on a lot more money, and he should be knocking on the manager's door, you know, at the appropriate time and asking for more money or a move.
I think, though, Lukaku, it's literally pick a team and he can go wherever he wants, can't he? He's that good. He's at that level.
Do you not think quite, so? No.
Do you think so?
I mean,
would be for me. I mean, I really like him. I think he's really, really good. But I think if he could pick a team and go wherever he wanted, then I think he might well have done that this summer. And the idea that he's gone away and he's had a big, long think about things, got into his thinking shed, you know, sort of potted around the garden and considered things, maybe stared out wistfully across the Mersey and then gone, no, I'm going to stay at Everton. I think if he was... he can't go anywhere he wants, not least because Everton are in no way obliged to sell him. He's under contract, and so therefore he can't pick a team. I mean, you could say anyone in the world would have him if he was on a free contract.
Yeah, but, free, yeah.
But exactly, you can't. But if Everton are going to say it's 75 million for him, then that's even now. I mean, you know, even with money that is getting lashed around, for instance, for Koulibaly in Italy at 60 million, 75 million is still a serious investment, plus the wages that you get along with that across a 5-year deal. So I don't think he can, and I think fair play to Everton, because I don't think Everton should even countenance the idea of letting him go. So I think what's almost certainly happened before this lovely little knock on the door and a big cuddle is that his agent has said, I've spoken to everyone, Romelu, and realistically no one's prepared right now to put 75 million on the table for you. Your best move now is to go and have the season of your life for Everton. And then next summer they'll be there. People like Lewandowski will be another year older. Higuain will be another year older at Juventus. There's not a great number of terrific centre-forwards coming through. Just sit tight, give it everything you've got for 12 months, which he will do. He's a professional footballer. Yeah. And then he might begin to get closer to having his pick. But if Everton are going to rightly say he's worth 75 million to us because he is, I mean, let's remember this. Mm. Aston Villa sold Benteke for 32.5 million and it effectively cost them their Premier League status. If they'd have had Benteke last season, they almost certainly would have stayed up. So what's Lukaku worth to Everton? Well, if he's the difference between 12th and 5th, or 12th and 4th even, then he's worth 70 million quid. Because you've got to go and replace him, you've got to go and buy another one. And so if all that's getting put on the table is 40 million in the current climate where you can't get a decent centre-forward, then I think Everton are behaving absolutely spot on. And I'd expect the footballer, because he's a professional footballer, there's no reason to act as though he's either being a mercenary or acting inappropriately. He'll be on the pitch and he'll be given everything he's got, because if he ever does want his move to Barcelona, to Bayern Munich, to Real Madrid, there's only one way he gets it, and it's by putting the ball in the back of the net for the Blues.
The other thing as well, Conor, if he goes and has the season of his life next year, if off what he's done in his career, you're only valuing a player on what he's done previously. And again, you're adding the X's of buyer's market, seller's market, whatever, all those little different bits and bobs. But if he goes and has the season of his life, Everton can quite rightly then say, well, we want 90 million for him now. We want a world record.
There's a couple of little question marks around him as well, which is, I think that he's one of those sorts of footballers, and he's a much better player than this example I'm about to use. But he's a good example, like Ryan Babel, where he's had his entire sort of career up until the age of 19, 20 has been comparatively relatively straightforward, because he's so big, so strong, so fast. And Babel had this thing where he was the quickest lad in his age group every single year at Ajax, and what that means is he's got these odd sort of dip-offs in his skill level, Lukaku, with things which you'd think he'd be pretty good at, and he's actually not quite as good as you'd think he is, because he's always been able to rely on the fact that firstly he's everyone's best player by a mile, anyone who's ever played for, so they'll always just get him on the ball, and secondly because he's always been able to say, well, I'll just knock these lads over, it'll be alright in the end, I'll run past them and I'll knock them over and we'll box it all off. Whereas, so I do think that in terms of making the step up from maybe being, rather than being Chelsea's best player to Chelsea's second best player or second best forward behind Costa, and that's a little difficult for him, and so I think that's going to take a bit of time, and it might be that a few sides have had a look at him and thought, we'll give him another 12 months to mature, because I think there's a terrific footballer in there. I'd love to see him play for Liverpool. It won't happen, but you know, he's a terrific player, but I wonder if a couple have had a look and gone, you know what, we'll give him another 12 months and then he might be a bit riper, a bit more ready to be plucked.
He's like that you know, there's always that kid in school who was so much better than everyone else, and then everyone else grew up around him, and now you see him in the pub on a Friday night looking a little bit plump and you go, actually, seriously, didn't really work out that well for you. And I suspect as well that I imagine that when Lukaku's in his little shed at the bottom of his
thinking
garden,
shed.
His thinking shed, I reckon, you know, there's like paint and creosote. I reckon he'd be a creosoter rather than a painter. Just what I have in my head to do is fences. But anyway,
with his overalls.
I'm just confused now.
Yeah, it's just the way the show goes sometimes. Right, you're listening to All in the Game. I'm Conor Phillips, joined in the studio at the moment by Paul Manning from the City of Liverpool Football Club. We'll discuss the formation of said football club and 4 from 4, very much, I suppose, more in depth after 6 o'clock. Neil Sang, football agent, joins me as well. And Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap will be back to discuss The horror show between Liverpool and Burnley at the weekend. 81% possession and couldn't find the back of the net. We'll do it very shortly.
This is Full Time. Radio City Talk.
You're listening to All in the Game. I'm Conor Phillips, joined by Paul Manning from the City of Liverpool Football Club, Neil Sang, football agent and follower of football, and Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap. Right, we've discussed Everton at length for the last half hour or so. So, gentlemen, Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap, I'll address this to you. 81% possession on Saturday afternoon, and watched the entire game. but they just could not unlock a very disciplined Burnley defence. Did Sean Dyche, or has the Premier League found out what Klopp's going to do, and is there no plan B?
I thought Liverpool were abject, and I think that's the starting point, is that the first thing you've got to say is forget what Klopp's going to do, although I do think there's conversations to be had around that. Liverpool's footballers were really, really bad at football at times. I think the first 20 minutes, Coutinho and Firmino have probably never played as poorly. For whatever reason, they've probably never played professional games as poorly, both of them. But that's two of your front three when you're looking to break a side down and set a tempo and set a tone, then you're already in trouble. And then you've got Henderson's performance declining hugely over the course of the game, to the point that for the first 20 minutes of the second half, again, as a he's probably never played as poorly in his life as he plays for the first 20 minutes of the second half. I think he finishes the game a little bit better, but he was absolutely dreadful for 20 minutes in there. And I don't think any way in which Liverpool set up helped a lot of these players. And I think there is a general issue around the way in which Liverpool are setting up, which is that they need a lot of players to play their 8 out of 10 game. And the reality of football is players don't tend to play their 8 out of 10 game every week. They tend to play their 6 or 7 out of 10 game more often than not. And that, if there's a frustration, it's that. In terms of how Liverpool are setting up, it's that. That's the frustration. And then on top of that, you've got conceding silly goals is a problem. Obviously, it's a problem for any football team, but what that does is it commits Burnley to the plan. I think one of the first things you want as a footballer is to believe in the plan. And if you're 1-0 up after 2 minutes, you couldn't believe in the plan anymore. If you're 2-0 up after 25 minutes, then your belief in this plan is unbelievable St. Paul on the road to Damascus levels of conversion. And that's what happened to Burnley, was that suddenly they didn't just add the plan, they had the 2-goal lead to defend. They had the security of it being a 2-goal lead. We're all in this together, lads. We'll see this through together. And Liverpool just could not force the issue at all. And as I say, I think that there's issues in the way in which they're set up, but to understand the setup, I think the first thing you should always do is you should ask, well, why has he done that? So why has he chosen to play Sturridge off the right? Why has he made the changes that he's made? What's the thought process? And I think the main thing is that he's aware that these three games, Arsenal, Burnley, Spurs, three away games, and I think what he's wanted to do is go with the same setup in all three, not just in terms of personnel, but in terms of what he's asking them to do tactically, because he spent the pre-season doing that, so he thinks, we'll just do this. So that's not to say that Liverpool will play the same way in October or November, but he's thinking to himself, right, this is what we've been working on, this is what we'll go with, we all know one another, and this is what we should do. What he can't account for, as I say, is conceding a silly goal. I don't like it anyway as a setup away from home with poorer sides, but he's the Liverpool manager and he's an idealist, and he's going to want to play the way in which he wants to play. And the way in which he wants to play is that you're going to learn how to play through these lads. That's what you're going to do. You're going to keep at it. And he'll see it. And he says it in his press conference today, and I'm pleased he did. In a sense, he says, you know, development isn't always 100% going forward. That's what he'll see it as. And as I say, he's Liverpool manager. He's in the right to be Liverpool manager. He's going to be Liverpool manager for the next 2 or 3 years. So get used to it, is what I'm saying. If people are saying, I'd rather he was doing X, Y, or Z, well, he's not going to.
Is there not, Neil Lowe, similarities with how Martinez finished his reign at Everton, where it was like, no, this is how we play? We've all criticised that.
But he's played, I mean, for instance, on the shape side, Martinez played the same shape every single time. You look at the back end of last, since January, Liverpool have played 6 different shapes in the league. The thing is, I think he's going at these three games as, this is how we're going to address Arsenal away, Burnley away, and Spurs away, no matter what. This is what we're going to do. And he'll have his own reasons for doing that. But yeah, I expect, and he said, when we were lucky enough to interview him, one of the things he said was, you'll see different formations, different first teams. He said, everyone's fixated on first teams. Everyone's fixated on formations. No. But what you should always see, though, is the same approach. And I think that approach is you win the ball back, you win it back high, you're aggressive, you're dynamic, you look to force the issue, you're quick. A lot of that wasn't in evidence against Burnley, but when he's talking about, for instance, his frustrations with attacking decision making, that's what he's referring to. What he's not doing is going back and saying, lads, did we set up wrong in terms of formation? So he's saying, what about mentality and approach?
Why then at 81% possession, could Liverpool not find the back of the net now? Because I will agree with you, Coutinho was pretty poor, Firmino was poor. It was one of those games
we were going, 2 of your 3 forwards, and I thought Sturridge was last as well, so there's all 3 of your forwards. I think it's partially what Burnley did, but Wijnaldum was broadly speaking anonymous. I've just slaughtered Henderson at the start of this. I thought Lallana played well for 25 minutes and then he fell off a cliff. So that's what I've just named
there's
your whole
front six.
So that's why they didn't score. If your front six all put in at best a 4 out of 10 game, maybe 5 out of 10 if you're being kind to Lallana.
It's the second game of the season. Surely your front four, this should be the 2 or 3 games where they're flat. And fitness wise and closing down, that's not a problem, but getting the ball in the back of the net was horrific.
But Liverpool as a club just keep doing the same things over and over, season after season. And we've got players who are going to position Liverpool between 6th and 8th. It's as simple as that. I mean, Mane has came in and made a big impact at Arsenal. Obviously, Mane was a loss on Saturday at Burnley. But we've got players and a player investment that's going to place you at a level, you know, 6, 7, or 8 in the league. It's not going to change until FSG or whoever the owners are actually make a massive investment and radically improve the quality of the squad. You're going to get roller coaster seasons like this where you can have 30 minutes at Arsenal where you look like you can beat anyone. No one could stop you. And then you'd have 40 minutes at Arsenal where you look like a championship team, and then you go to Burnley and you look worse than a championship team. And that's because you're not buying players who are of the top level. A lot of players that are not at the top level, and they can't perform consistently, as Neil has just said, 8 out of 10 every week. They can only perform that once every 4 or 5 weeks, and mostly it's 5s or 6s. And unfortunately, Jordan Henderson is a prime example of that. And how he is the captain of Liverpool Football Club is beyond me, and I know it's beyond an awful lot of other people as well.
It's quite straightforward why he's the captain. He was the most senior player when Gerrard was going to step down. He was going to play regularly, and this goes back to Hicks and Gillette. And a lot of the stuff that you're talking about is that Liverpool actually haven't got a senior player in that squad between the age of 26 and 29. And the reason why is because for 3 years Liverpool didn't just not go forwards, Liverpool went actively backwards. And so the only players that they've had in the meantime who fulfil that criteria is probably Suarez, who's left. So the reason why Henderson ends up as captain, and trust me, I'm sure that if you were Henderson's agent and you were building the entire ideal Liverpool career for him, it wouldn't have involved him becoming the Liverpool captain after Steven Gerrard. He probably would have wanted to be vice captain to someone else at that point and then go from there rather than have all that pressure on him. But I mean, even Henderson, I felt as though he was completely emasculated by the role he was asked to play. I thought he was absolutely terrible at it at times, and for that he's got to look at himself. But the best two balls Liverpool play all match, neither of which connect, by the way, are the ball that Henderson swings in from the right-hand side, right-hand channel, with Firmino arriving at the back post, which takes a bit of great defending to cut out. The only time any Burnley player had to do any great defending was that moment. That was the only time they ever looked stretched, was then. And I feel for Henderson in that. I think he's got to play fair up the pitch, and when you're looking at fair, I mean, without putting Liverpool player against Liverpool player, because let's be really, really clear about this. It was, as I say, I'll allow Lallana a little bit of leeway. I can't be bothered getting into the goalkeeper. I'll slaughter you, the nine. And when it's that collective, when the performance is that collectively that bad, you know, it would be wrong to... I think it's wrong anyway to pick on a footballer, but it would be wrong to pick on any one player after this game, because you're looking at nine performances, which are, I think, as I say, I think there's a number of them out there who won't have had a 20 minutes as bad as a professional footballer as they've had. It's not just even inconsistency, it's being absolutely dreadful.
So people who are slating Klopp this morning and people who are saying no plan B and discussing, you know, same old, I've seen Stan Collymore making some comments about it as well. Do we just forget about that and say, right, the players had a bad day at the office? Is it as simple as that?
No, it's a bit of both, because you look at Klopp, for instance, and there's Liverpool have had 60% possession plus 8 times since Klopp's coming away from home. And of those 8 games, they've won 1. For Aston Villa, and we know how bad they were. They've drawn 2, they've lost 5. They're 4-9, and they're against, I think it's 15. Mm. So if you take the Aston Villa game out, given how bad Villa were, that's no wins in those 7 games. It's 2 draws and 5 defeats, and it's only scoring 3 goals across those 7 games when they've had 60% possession plus. So what there needs to be is Liverpool have got to work out, and I think he's working on that, and I think if he was sitting here now, he'd say, lads, this is, and I think that's what he said in his press conference, it's not going to happen overnight, but I know what it is that we're trying to do, and this is why we're trying to, it might frustrate you sometimes, because we're trying to play clever balls and get used to each other and play around the corner, and that's why I don't change it, because I want them to get as good at this as humanly possible. That's what I want them to do, to be as good at this way of playing as we possibly can, so we're going to keep doing this, because this is the way I see us getting results. And so I think that that's what you're looking at, and that's why, you know, I don't think you can just simply say, oh, it's a bad day in the office. I don't think it is, but he's the Liverpool manager. He's going to be the Liverpool manager for the next 2 years. He's got every minimum, and I think it'll be longer. I'd be surprised if he doesn't see his whole contract out. He's got every right to say, this is the way in which I see us solving this problem, and go from there. And I think that everyone is trying to, I think that there's a lot of easy sort of things to decide that you're going to have a pop on, X, Y, or Z, and I can list them, and I can have a pop on them as much as anybody else, and it can either be on specific individuals or it can be on specific setup. But Jurgen Klopp's chosen these players. He could have sold any of them this summer. They're the players he's going with. He set them up the way he wants to set them up. This is what's happening. Them passing it along the back, it does matter in the ground. I'm really, really, I want to actually say this on the radio. If you're screaming at them for passing it along the back at the ground, have you ever played footy? Because if you play right back, the only reason you don't hoof it forward when you're under pressure is if the manager's told you, we pass it round at the back. It's not Nathaniel Klein who's going, you know what I want to do? I want to take a little touch here and have a little look. It, like when Mignolet used to dink the ball into the manager's telling them to do
I'm
that.
I'm going to give you your proper soapbox in a second, right? Because that's what this is all for. We want you to, you're so soapbox if you're listening as well, at Radio City Talk. Get your frustrations in. Give us a call, 01517 08 1059. Let me know what you're thinking, what you're thinking about the fans, the setup. Also, Burton Albion coming up in the next couple of nights. You've spoken to some of the people at Burton, Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap. We'll talk about that, what we have to expect, what's next for Liverpool, how they can actually expand what they've been doing and develop it ever so slightly. And we'll talk about it all in a second. And I'm looking forward to getting back on said soapboxes in a second right here on Radio City Talk.
This is Full Time. Radio City Talk.
It is Full Time. It is All in the Game. Every single Monday night between 5 and 6:30, we discuss exactly what happened in the Premier League in the weekend that has just passed. We've already had an extensive discussion about Everton, their setup, and their victory over West Brom. And we're currently mid-rant, all of us, specifically Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap. I'm allowing
it's quite
him...
It's quite a simple thing. It's just this idea that the footballers... There's things that you do when you play football and things that you don't do. And the things that you want to do is that if you're a defender, you want to kick the ball as far away from your goal as possible. And in the first minute of the game, Liverpool get caught messing about with the ball and they concede a goal. And everyone's very, very frustrated. But you don't do that unless someone has repeatedly coached you to do it. Unless someone said, this is what you do in this scenario, this is how we start the game, this is what we're about. What does Clavin want to do? He wants to kick the ball as far away from his own goal as possible, not try and pass it to Nathaniel Clyne. What does Nathaniel Clyne want to do? Not even get it under control. I'll just slice it into touch if need be. But they're being told, knock it around the back, invite them on. I mean, you look at that first goal, Burnley have got six players effectively in the Liverpool final third, absolutely pressing them. So what should be happening or could happen is that you could, for instance, find a little pass, bing, 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 and suddenly you, for the only time in the match, realistically, you could have turned them round. That's the manager's thought process and that's what he works on with them. So people going absolutely bananas at the players. Do you think that's helping them? Because they themselves, Nathaniel Clyne's probably thinking, I just want to hoof this. I just don't want this to be my problem anymore.
So then does it become an issue? Does it become a setup issue? Does it become a Jurgen Klopp issues? Should we be frustrated at Jurgen Klopp rather than
if people want to be frustrated, then I think if he was sitting here, he'd question bits and pieces of the criticism the side have got, but I think he'd say, no, that one's on me, lads. That's on me. Don't stop thinking, you know, that one is literally on me. That's what I want them to do, and they've had to go at it and it's not worked. And you could see him on the sidelines, he was clapping.
He was clapping
them back to the halfway line.
In terms of the tactics, Neil, you're probably 100% right, but you've already spoken about how several players were just abject on the day.
And that's what I mean, and that's why, for instance, I'm more frustrated with Coutinho and Firmino than I am with Clavin and Clyne. I think Clavin's dreadful for the second, actually, but I think he's dreadful in about 3 or 4 times in a 5-second space of time, which is remarkable. It reminded me of John Arisa. But it's Coutinho and Firmino who start the game ridiculously slowly, as though they've forgotten the game was on and they've only just got there and all that sort of stuff. I mean, they were really, really poor. And as I say, I think by about 16, 17, 18 minutes, you know, Coutinho started the cut in, shaped the shoes, blazed it over the bar. He started that nonsense again, which I think shows a lack of faith in his teammates and in the side to resolve the issue of how we get through against Burnley. Yeah. And you know, Sturridge just throwing his hands up in frustration on 25 minutes. And that, where I'm frustrated with the Liverpool players is they stopped having faith in one another in terms
Correct.
Of
we'll that sort, was my point.
We'll sort this out between them. The trust breaks down by about 25, and it's not sorted at half time. And that's what they're going to have to get over. And I think that this is where all the doubts that you've got in them as supporters in terms of their own consistency or all that sort of stuff, they're all looking at each other and they're all players who are pretty good, but they're not looking at each other thinking, I think you're great. And that's something that they're going to have to resolve, because if they can't get to that point where they can just basically keep doing what we're meant to do, this is what we're meant to do, this is how we're meant to address this, this is the way we play our football, we just keep going.
So it's faith in Klopp. Do you think it's faith
in one another as well? I mean, they're looking at each other like, he's doing my head in. I'm not passing to him, he's doing my head in. Everyone's seen it. We've seen it a million times. Coutinho stops passing to people. Coutinho stops looking for where Lallana is. He's not looking around for Wijnaldum. He's coming getting the ball off Henderson's toes. No, mate, you're not David Beckham. And this isn't Greece in 2002. You've got a job to do, and your job is to play left wing for Liverpool. Come inside and find the pass that supplies Daniel Sturridge. Just because you're annoyed with Daniel Sturridge doesn't mean you stop doing that. Similarly, just because Daniel Sturridge has had enough of watching Firmino mess about when he thinks I should play centre forward, not him, doesn't mean that Daniel Sturridge shouldn't make the run into the box when it's 2-0 in the second half, when Firmino puts it across goal and there's literally no one there to tap it in. That's the problem. And it's faith in the plan to a certain extent, but it's faith in one another, and it's got to get addressed.
I wonder, does Coutinho have a garden shed? That's just the question. I wonder, does he have a little potting shed he goes down and has a little look at?
Stolen 11 of them at Melbourne now. 11 shed, squad numbers all on them.
Only if they overlook the River Mersey.
Have a sit
in that
now.
Vista, don't they?
They need the Vista.
Let's have a quick look look ahead to tomorrow's opponents in, what is it? The EPL trophy is how it's called now?
EFL.
It's the League Cup, right? So it's happening tomorrow. Burton Albion, and O'Neill, you spoke to some of the Burton Albion set up earlier on today. A very attacking side, a side who aren't afraid to leak a goal if they can score a goal. They've almost gone with the as long as we score more than you mentality. What do you reckon's ahead for tomorrow?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and they're not going to compromise it either. Again, talking about managers as idealists, Nigel Clough, as his father was, is an idealist. The way in which he's an idealist is that, you know, they played four, scored nine, conceded nine, got 4 points in the bank in the championship, and that's how they're going about the business this season. They supposedly play three at the back, play 3-5-2. They're meant to be, looking to be a footballing side, but they're aware of their own limitations. So I think it could be a really good game, to be honest with you. And I think that they'll be wanting to put a bit of a show on. I think it's as much for them. Their entire approach towards this season is they're in a league they probably shouldn't be in. They're a League One side who's found themselves in the Championship, and they're going to enjoy it while they're there. And I think if that's their attitude towards league football, I'd expect them to have exactly the same attitude towards cup football, and Liverpool are in for a game.
And do you think, Paul Manning from the City of Liverpool FC, do you think Liverpool are going to go with their relatively weakened side, or is this a perfect opportunity for them to bounce back, use quite a strong side, and do what Neil was saying earlier on, start having trust in each other once again?
Yeah, well, I think the result of Burnley is obviously should affect his decision making on that, and I think he's really got to put a strong side out. What he can't afford to do now is lose this game. Burton, like all lower league clubs coming to Liverpool or Everton or whatever, will bring a massive following. They'll have a brilliant atmosphere. It'll be a big day out. They'll be inspired into their players, and their players will raise their game. So if Liverpool go on the pitch with anything other than the correct attitude that Mr. Klopp has put into them, then Liverpool are in for a hard night, and I don't think Klopp can afford that, not from a sacking point of view or whatever, but just from a momentum and a confidence and positivity view. Liverpool need to win this game tomorrow night.
Sangi, what do you think? Burton coming to Anfield, it's kind of a win-win for them. How should Liverpool set up?
He's got to go and do what he did against Burnley, because if you're going to stick with that philosophy and that approach, if he's set that as his stall, he's certainly got to go and my opinion would be, whilst they're still working on it, it's still a working in progress. He's got to go and play his. I was just going to say that it's not at Anfield.
It's not at Anfield.
Just written with a
word. Fair play to Neil Atkinson for the Anfield rap. That was a proper gentleman's approach. What he did was he just picked up a piece of paper in front of me and just wrote down, "We are away." I was almost making a wee kiss at the end of that as well. But so Liverpool are away. I beg your pardon, my fault. Again, this makes it even an even trickier situation. The fact that they have to travel to a place that's probably not what they're used to. It's the glamorously well put together footballer, as in, you know, the Coutinhos, the Firminos of this world. Do they or can they go there and show the world that they are better than that? And this is a perfect opportunity for Burton to go, actually, you know what, you're coming to our patch, we'll do it our way.
Yeah, definitely. Any
it's a way, just in case.
Yeah, exactly. The Burton way. It's a new philosophy on football. No, but it's for any player outside of the Premier League playing against a side like Liverpool, even a West Ham or a Sunderland for that matter, they want to show people that they're good enough, because that's every player who's playing for Burton wants to try and get in the Premier League. So they're going to go on.
This thing that Sangi says there, and I'm glad he's mentioned Premier League clubs, because make no mistake about it, Liverpool might have finished 8th last season, but if you ask the Burnley players before the ball's kicked to rank your top four that you're looking forward to this season, Liverpool's in there.
For someone that might
be first or second, it's a scalp and it's a massive game for them. And I think that this is something that Liverpool have got to start clocking and working out, that they're coming up against a side who are, if there's any game, just to have a toss of a coin, it could be at any point of the season, which is a massive one for them. It's when Liverpool come to town. And so let's deal with this reality rather than think, you know what, it's just like another league game. For them, the first 15 minutes of that game, Burnley at the weekend, it's massive. For Burton this Tuesday night, they've got a really big game. They've got a derby against Derby on Friday night. But for them, this first 15 minutes against Liverpool, it's a really, really big 15 minutes in their lives. Not just in their careers or in the season, but in their lives. This is the 15 minutes you're going to tell your grandchildren about, the 90 minutes you're going to. Start acting like that. Start being aware that these are all derbies. Treat them like derbies. Don't swan in there and spend 20 minutes giving it away and trying to work out what you're about.
I was going to go to you, Paul, actually. Sorry to cut across you. From a perspective, from you play in one of the lower leagues in the City of Liverpool Football Club, brand new club, 4 wins out of 4. We'll talk about that after 6 o'clock. But you, every team that comes to you now is a scalp, right? Because you want to get your victories on the board. Do you address the big clubs coming to you differently than the so-called smaller clubs?
Well, they're all big clubs compared to us, aren't they? You know, we've only played those four competitive games. We've had, I think we had seven pre-season games, and we went to a big club, Prescott Cables. We played Bootle, a big club. And in one of our games we could handle it, in another game we couldn't handle it against Bootle. They absolutely battered us. But Neil's absolutely right. Liverpool remain a scalp. You'd only have to go on holiday to realise the level of interest and intrigue that goes on around Liverpool Football Club, around the world. And so in England, if you're Burton Albion and you've got them at home on a Tuesday night in the EFL Cup or whatever it's called, they're going to go
on the telly.
Yeah, they're going on the, you're on the telly. They're going to go at Liverpool big style. Klopp has called it a Liverpool day. Oh, we've had the Liverpool day again, and Burnley was probably another Liverpool day, and that's a big issue for him. But it just reinforces the message, I think, or the point that I made earlier. He can't afford to put a weakened side out. He's got to go out and really put players on the pitch who are going to be able to handle this pressure.
Right, with 30 seconds.
You're Sean Dyche, you come into the dressing room at half time. What are you turning around and saying to them? You're saying you're 45 minutes away from what could be one of the biggest wins of your life, lads. Genuinely, you know, you look at they beat Man City when they last came up. But for these footballers, they need to get used to winning those sorts of games. But if you're Sean Dyche, you're able to say, 45 minutes, don't do anything stupid, don't do anything rash. You'll see this out. They're not quite sure what they're about today. And that's what Liverpool have got to get over, that a manager is able to give that sort of team talk before, during and after the football match, and then he gets to walk in afterwards and says 2-0 lads, and they barely lay the glove on you.
Right, I'm joined by Paul Manning from the City of Liverpool Football Club, Neil Sang, football agent and general commentator, Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap, right here on All in the Game on Radio City Talk. Right, we're approaching 6 o'clock, coming up in a bit. We find out a little bit more about the City of Liverpool Football Club, if you're not aware of the phenomenon, and we'll also chat about the other big results of the weekend. Manchester City 4-1 winners at Stoke. Manchester United looked like they could be getting in their stride after Friday night football, and we find out how Leicester and Arsenal developed. 0-0. Champions, anyone?
This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool. Now, full time on Radio City Talk.
Good evening. Just after 6 o'clock, I'm Connor Phillips. You're listening to Full Time and you're listening to All in the Game. 90 minutes of solid football chat about the weekend that has just gone. Joined by Paul Manning from the City of Liverpool Football Club, Neil Sang, football agent, and Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap. Now we can finally get into this and dig a little bit deeper into the joy, the wonderment, the passion that is the City of Liverpool Football Club. Now, Paul, you've been on the show quite a few times over the last number of weeks, as it's your first season. You're a brand new club. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes to chat about the setup of the club, how the City of Liverpool Football Club came to be, and what it actually stands for as well.
Yeah, well, it's a community-owned, supporter-owned football club for the people of Liverpool. It's dead simple. Anyone is entitled to be a member of the club. £10 for adults, £5 for over 65s and young adults, and kids under 15 are free, so a family can own a share in our football club. Now, it's not a capitalist share. It's whatever your share value is, it's never going up. The value is in seeing this club rise from nothing into a football club for the City of Liverpool. And where that football club ends, Connor, is up to the people of Liverpool.
So, with regards to the first four matches, we talked to you right throughout pre-season. Yeah. Hasn't gone too bad.
Well, it's gone absolutely brilliantly on the pitch, hasn't it? And all credit must go to Simon Burton and his staff and the lads who he's putting on the pitch, who are delivering results at any level of football, Sangi will tell you. Two teams want to win the game, two sets of coaches, two sets of staff, and winning a football match is not an easy thing to do. So for Simon to go out and win four on the run, give us a perfect start on the pitch, it's beyond our dreams, really.
So from an agent perspective, Sangi, right, do you get to go down and do you look at that level? Are you sort of always keeping an eye out for players down there who just never got that chance or never were given that chance?
Absolutely. I was at Prescott Cables last week. I always say I'll go out and I'll watch a game of football anywhere. I had a recommendation on a player. Didn't quite do it for me on the night, but you've got to have an ability as a spotter of talent to know whether that was that kid's worst game ever.
Do you go back?
Absolutely. I saw a couple of little things that I quite liked. And as I said, as a spotter of talent, you've got to look and say, well, it could be his worst night ever. That's poor for me to just judge him on that. Mm. Equally, I've got to know, well, that could be his best game ever. I don't think he'll step up. And that's the real tough part of scouting. But I absolutely go there because you know why? I know the football culture, and I'm a big believer in, I call it positive disruption. There's so many new age things and new ways of thinking that you can bring to a football club, but because it's draconian and it's fabric, people go, well, why do we do it like this? Well, because we've always done it like that. My answer is, well, that's a load of nonsense. Look at some of the studies. Look at the neuroscience that's available. All these different leadership models you can have now. All these different things that you can do around motivation and inspiration and stuff like that. So my thing is, there'll be lads playing for Paul who, given the right environment, his, where it's go and play and loving the environment, loving the big crowds and all the rest of it, who've probably had their heart broken at 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, 14, whatever, because there's a reason why they're at that level. If you tap into somebody's self-esteem, you're tapping into the biggest source of motivation ever. So if you make a young Scouse kid feel great about himself and give him a platform to play, trust me, this city produces the best football players on the planet.
Are you seeing that now at the moment, Paul? Are you seeing that kids, grassroots, people you've kept your eyes on have even surprised you?
Not in a football sense, because I'm not at Neil's level in terms of scouting or looking or whatever. I was more under chairman, aren't I? So I was fighting to set the club up. But I know from Simon's point of view, he was very impressed when we had the open trials. We got about 35 kids coming along to that. He was amazed at the standard. We took 8 of those kids into pre-season training, and I think 3 or 4 of them are still in the first team squad now. So what we're looking to do is give young Scouse lads a chance, because Neil's just touched on it. Liverpool produces more footballers than any city in this country other than London. Mm. We've got a great history in the English schools football. We win that, yep, you know, every the year. The National Sunday Cup, the Pub Lads, the Oyster, the Martyr, the Campfield, the Old Eagle, Dingle Rail. They win that every year as well. This city is the greatest city in the country for football per head. London's bigger, obviously, blah, blah. But our players, after 13, 14, maybe being let go, and maybe lads who never even got a chance in the first place, they are travelling the length and breadth of this country, and not just players, coaches as well, Connor, to play for other clubs. Because there wasn't a club in this city between Step 7 and the Premier League at 11 divisions of football with no football club. And we wanted to change that.
So, brilliant. With regards to yourself, Sangi, you being a football agent, the transfer window closes quite soon. You know, you've half a dozen days or so, whatever's left. From the level you play at, Paul, do you have a transfer window, and how does it work when you want to get players in and out? So I suppose in essence what I'm asking is, are you still consistently looking for talent? And there could be talent listening at the moment thinking that might be something I want to get involved with.
Absolutely, there is no transfer window. We can put players on a contract. Neil has already alluded to that, but the vast majority of the transfers between clubs at our level is done on what's called a 7-day notice. So if we speak to a club and say we're interested in Neil Sang, for example, we're going to sign, and we speak to Neil, he agrees to come to us, we give them 7 days notice, the lad can't play for us for those 7 days. After that, he's our player. And similarly, players can leave City, Liverpool Football Club if they want to.
So you're going to see maybe a little, do you see like a turnover? Well, it's very early in the season, you're only there 4 games. Do you suspect that you'll see a turnover of some players within the squad?
Yeah,
In and out,
I think. And that's not taken away from our lads who have done the business for us on the pitch at all, but I think it's the nature of the beast at this level. But what we're hearing from the lads is that playing in front of, you know, 400 or 500 partisan supporters, Scouse supporters, with a raw Scouse atmosphere, we don't think our lads are going to want to leave. Obviously, someone from a higher division comes along and offers them more money, it can happen.
Right, let's have a quick look at the Premier League games from throughout the weekend. Not talking about Liverpool or Everton this time. Let's head across and have a little look at Friday Night Football. It's back now. This is odd, weird and strange. But it came back with a bit of a bang, and a Manchester United side who looked like... It pains me to say it, they look like the mean business. Manchester United 2-0 winners over Southampton. First of all, Neil, Friday Night Football, does it work? And give me your assessment on United.
Yeah, no, absolutely works for me. I mean, any night there's a game of footy on, I'm loving it. The only night there isn't is a Thursday until the Europa League starts. So I've got to make do with golf, haven't I? That's the first day of every US golf tournament starts on a Thursday. But no, I thought it was great. And any time there's a big Premier League side involved, you want to watch it. I'm not sure that a West Ham Bournemouth tickles me fancy massively, but Man United against Southampton, Man United against anyone, Everton against anyone, I'm always watching. And the difference with Man United is, against, say, a Liverpool, they've got that pace and power. They've got... I was going to touch on it before when Neil was speaking, but he rattled on, didn't he?
If you could get away.
He rattled on. But the thing for me was, there doesn't seem to be that real character, that real steel, that, you know, the, you get Sturridge throwing his arms up in the air, you get Coutinho rolling his eyes.
It was Mane against Arsenal. He was that steely character.
Exactly.
Weird, after just one match playing for Liverpool, Liverpool missed him.
Missed him massively, and all the fans who I've spoken to since were devastated when they heard of his injury. So, but I think Liverpool need those characters. Man United are going to be a force because they've got Ibrahimovic, the belief, the aura, the ability of him, the size, the strength, the power. Add to that Pogba, you've then got Rooney, who I don't think has been fantastic for the last 12 months, but it's Wayne Rooney. Mm. His all right is better than 95% of players' best. So you look at their mix of pace, power, leaders, belief. They're going to be a big force, Conor, in my opinion.
Right. Paul, I don't know about this Friday night football thing. I like the thought of it. I like the thought of sitting down, finish work on a Friday, going and watching a football match. Yes, that excites me. But when you look at what happened, the fixtures that are due to happen on the Friday night as well is very much North playing South. And if you think of somebody, first of all, they'll have to get the day off work, right, to go to that match, because they have to be down, they have to be left, they have to beat the traffic or get in a train or a plane or whatever it is, take the day off work. There was no trains coming back up after that game because it had gone past the time of trains. The Premier League, this does genuinely worry me, because the Premier League have just gone, how can we make more money, right? Sky will pay us more if we put the games on a Friday night as well. Forget about the fans. Yeah. Literally, forget about them.
It's a disgrace, Conor, to be honest. It's not the first disgrace from the powers that be who run football. No consideration whatsoever. Semi-finals played at Wembley, two local teams, no trains coming back from Wembley. And if this is a North-South sort of fixture that's going to happen on a Friday night, it's outrageous.
Let me have a quick search. Just Sangi, give me your view on that. I'm going to have a quick search for the Friday night fixture. I think it's pretty much North versus South.
No, that's a good point.
Games.
I mean, I'm because of, you know, in my head was sitting down, as you said, kind of watching it on the TV with your family or with your mates or whatever.
As a neutral.
But if it's, as you say, if you're looking at the fans, then to come from Southampton to Man United on a quiet run, i.e. no traffic, you're talking 4.5 hours. Yeah. Minimum in the car, at the expense of it and everything else, organising it and whatever. And so the Premier League, yeah, do your Friday night games, but do it as Man United, Man City, do it as Man United, Everton.
It's got to be a local fixture, hasn't it? And I mean, our two local supporter groups, Spirit of Shankly and Blue Union, have both worked extremely hard and worked together, along with Man United and Man City supporter groups coming together, and got this the away ticket arrangements in place in the Premier League last season, and this season, which is amazing to get the Premier League tickets down to £30. So our supporter groups are active in that, and I think they would be active if it was our clubs involved in ridiculous Friday night fixtures.
Let me look at this. The next one, Chelsea against Liverpool, Friday the 16th of September, exactly the same problem. Yeah. Right, it means the people here going to London, taking the day off work, can you get trains back up the road? Yeah. Let me have a quick look here. There's not one then for a while. But in essence, it's this whole thing. It's like, you know, let's make as much money as possible and not worry about you or I. You have to get in there and fork out the money for it.
The fact is, I think Friday night football is evocative and it's good, and people would be interested and excited with it if it was on the doorstep, and if, you know, it wasn't going to cause a major disruption, financial and physical.
Because look at Liverpool. Liverpool have been able to get things sorted out with the Premier League and go, look, can we play Burnley at Burnley because we're getting the stadium redeveloped? You know, you could help us out here. And they've reshuffled things around. It's not a massive ask to say, I tell you what, right, if you're going to go for this, why don't we go with, say, for example, the Derby, Liverpool-Everton, stick it in a Friday night if it's a big thing. But then again, they don't want to take that away from Sunday afternoon football, and then the argument starts all over again. But I'm sure it's something we're going to have many discussions about between now and the end of the season. Let's have a quick look at Swansea-Hull. Delighted for Hull. I don't know what it is. I feel like they're going to be my second team this year.
Okay, it could be Leicester again, couldn't it? You just don't know. With Hull, the frustrations are all levelled at the ownership. Steve Bruce, who's a good Premier League manager, walked because of it. Mike Phelan then comes in, and this could be a fantastic twist of fate for Hull. Mike Phelan comes in, full of the joys of spring, doesn't really care that the owners aren't putting any money in place to make signings. He's going to give that job his absolute heart and soul. So in a weird twist of fate, it could actually serve Hull really, really well. I don't think, again, I look at the squads and look at the personnel and everything else, I'm not sure they're going to go on and sustain it. I never thought Leicester would until it got to about February and March. I'm thinking they could go on and win this. Uh-huh. They just had something extra special. But the start that Hull have under Mike Phelan could serve them well in their fight to stay up, because if they go and get, I don't know, 10 or 15 points on the board in the next 6 or 8 weeks, that's going to be an unbelievable start. So I think the ownership issues have served them well.
A little bit of a blessing in disguise.
It certainly could be. I don't know much about Hull, to be fair. I mean, from Swansea's point of view, that was a really debilitating defeat. You know, they're a partially supporter-owned football club, and they've had a long period now of sustained success and or stability.
So decent run as well. They've got some good fixtures.
They have, but to lose at home, I think they were at home, lost.
So
Hull 2-0. I know it done my coupon in. It probably done loads of other people's coupons in as well.
Chelsea beating Watford 2-1. Conte, I think I read a stat the other day. Indeed, it was on this very station. I mentioned that Conte has only lost one club match in there. I think that's 30 games. So not a bad record for a club manager. Are Chelsea going to be a force this season?
I would think so. Again, it's the newness, it's the new ideas. It's players coming into Chelsea wanting to impress a new manager. People don't know where he can go and where he can take the football club. So players will always give a new manager their absolute best attention for the initial period. That might change as they work him out or they get to dislike some of his methods. But certainly initially they're going to give him everything.
From my point of view, I just like watching Italian managers. I just think they're great, the way they go wild, and he's no different. He dresses very smartly on the line and goes absolutely ballistic, so I like him.
They don't get on, from all reports, the two managers, the Watford manager and the Chelsea manager, from there's a rumbling argument from years ago.
Do any of them get on with each other? They all seem to hate each other.
And there's always a frosty handshake at the end, isn't it? They don't have eye contact. The hand comes out and they're off.
They don't like losing, do they, any of them?
Big Sam and Alex Ferguson were the only friends, weren't they?
Didn't work for Big Sam, though, did it?
He's doing all right at the minute. He's doing okay at the minute, yeah. Spurs 1-0 victors over Crystal Palace. I suspected Spurs would kick into gear at some stage. They had a decent, half against Everton. Victor Wanyama getting his first goal for Spurs after 82 minutes. Spurs third in the Premier League they ended up last season. They continuously flatter to deceive, but it looks like Pochettino might have just the balance just about right. Do you suspect they're going to be right up there?
I don't think they're flatter to deceive. I think they've got a great manager and they've got a squad which they just build year on year on year. I think they're a very good side, Tottenham, and they've invested heavily in their squad, and therefore they're going to end up with a position second, third or fourth in the Premier League. I think they're really good, Spurs.
There's something about them, and there's something about Pochettino, and I think I mentioned this in the show last week. I was speaking to Gary Neville. Hold on, I'll pick up that name. Sorry, I was dropping names all over the place. And he mentioned to me that he had been spent 3 days with him. This was a couple of years ago, just when he took over Spurs. It wouldn't be, but 18 months ago. And he just spent 3 days with him. Just went to the training ground, found out what he did, followed him, looked at his style, looked at his management, looked at him as a person. And it was a Q&A I'd done with Gary Neville, and he said that, look, he genuinely is the best manager he has seen. And he's up there with Fergie, according to Neville. That's high praise.
Reasons? What did he give? What reasons did he give?
I think basically the way in which he treats, talks to the players, his attitude, and he's brought everything in. He's brought everyone together. And he just has this aura about him. Are Spurs, no disrespect to Spurs, but if he is, in essence, that manager, if he does give Spurs another top three finish this year, he is one of those managers just going to be picked off by one of the big, big, big clubs, isn't he?
Well, yeah, but you know what? There's no reason why Spurs can't become a big club. You look at the history and heritage of Tottenham Hotspur. Massive club. You know, they will have been talked in monstrous terms back in the day. So there's no reason why they can't rediscover that sort of mantra and that sort of level.
And move into a bigger stadium, Neil, shortly.
Exactly. And so they've got a multi-billionaire owner in Joe Lewis behind the scenes. They've got a fierce negotiator. He's not very well liked, but he's a fierce
Mr. Levy.
Yeah, he's a fierce negotiator. He does the best for his organisation. It's maybe not the sort of friendliest, the tactics, but he does what he does for his club. And again, I look at their squad, strength and depth. They've got a great mix of English talent as well, local lads. They've got pace, power, aggression all over the pitch. And again, it's a team for me that if they win the Premier League this year, as a tiny surprise as it would be, it wouldn't be a shock in most people's eyes, certainly not mine.
Yeah, and they're quite easy to like as well as a club. You know, I know from a Merseyside perspective, we'll pick different clubs that we don't like, we dislike, I'm sure, down the M62.
You've never walked down a Tottenham Court Road, obviously. Not Tottenham Court Road, Seven Sisters Road, obviously.
The Holloway Road, yeah.
Seven Sisters Road down to Tottenham. That's enough to make you not like Tottenham Hotspur, but that's showing me age.
I used to live beside White Hart Lane, and yeah, I get what you mean. There can be, but they don't have that sort of, I don't want to use the word hatred, but I'm going to use it here anyway, that people don't like West Ham and disrespect Chelsea.
Yeah.
They're an easier team to like, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, I've never lived in that part of London, but I like them as a club, as Neil said. I like the manager, I like everything about them. They're old school football supporters as well, so it's all positive for Tottenham, I think.
Let's have a look at this is a surprise me, or has it? Leicester 0, Arsenal 0. Two questions. One, where has the Leicester spark gone to? And two, are Arsenal in fear of finishing like Chelsea did last season? I don't know what it is, I just have a feeling.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I think Arsene Wenger, I think players are now, because if you look at a lot of his squad, a lot of them have been there for years and a lot of them know him really well. I just wonder whether the whole organisation needs a new voice and needs a new direction now. I think it's just same old, same old. I think the fans as well, I think you can feel that. If you watch them on the TV, if you read any quotes online about Arsenal, it's always a bit, here we go again from the fans. And players feel that, you know, and they'll feel it's levelled at them as much as Arsene Wenger. So I think they're going to struggle this season. I know they haven't had probably three or four of their best players start in the first couple of games, and it's still only early days.
But this seems to continue on. This seems to happen every season, that Arsene Wenger always has two or three players out injured for an extended period of time. I think they've had more injuries in his period as manager than any other club. So surely it's like last season when Klopp came to Liverpool, he tried a style, a lot of boys were getting hamstring injuries, but hopefully that is levelled out now, right? And he's trying to get over that and maintain this high pressing game. Arsenal don't seem to ever fix this thing that keeps going wrong, players out with really strange injuries.
I don't know about really strange injuries, but they're a club that looks stuck in the mud, don't they?
Yep.
You know, they're just treading water. They will be the team to flatter to deceive this season, in my opinion. They'll beat all the lower reach teams. They'll be around third or fourth all season, and Wenger will just carry on. It's going to be very difficult for them to remove him, and when they do remove him, it's going to be extremely difficult to replace him.
I think with Arsenal, you see the frustration in fans more than any other club in the Premier League. And I always wonder, how are you still an Arsenal fan? How can you maintain sanity when Arsene Wenger just won't spend money? From an agent's perspective, why doesn't he spend the money that's there?
I think he's...
It came out today with this quote that the Arsenal Football Club of 600...
Yeah, they're awash with money. Absolutely, they're awash with money. I think there are certain managers who have this belief system of you've got to treat it like it's your own. David Moyes had it. In terms of an ownership opinion, David Moyes was a dream at Everton. Arsene Wenger is a dream at Arsenal from the ownership perspective. But there's got to come a time, and I think I've heard owners in the past, and I won't name any names. I've heard owners in the past.
That's his phrase, by the way. No, I won't name any names.
Yeah,
but, he never does.
Yeah, but you expected a name dropping, though.
You'll drop one and it'll break your toe, and I won't. I've heard them say, oh, we'd be happy if you stay up this year. And I've gone, have you just really said that? And they go, yeah, because, you know, then if we go up and there's big investment, it's all about the money with certain owners. So you'll get, I think for me, you'll get ones who are, it's all about the money, or ones who will, they'll sell their daughter to buy a player, and they'll throw everything at it and they'll lose the shirt, and it's just bad mismanagement of money. But I think from an ownership point of view, Arsene Wenger's a dream. I think it just, because of the way he's done it and because of the respect probably that he's built up from the ownership, they're going to find it hard. Their narrative, I'll guarantee you, in the corridors of power will be totally different to what it is in mainstream media. Behind the scenes, they'll be going, 600 million in the bank, we're safe forever, that's our legacy, the club will never lose money, blah, 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 keep Arsene Wenger in the role. If you get somebody else in, you know, Jose Mourinho goes in there, do you think he's going to say, yeah, keep your 600 million in the bank? He's going to say, give me half of it and I'll win you the league.
And that's why
big decision.
That's the point I've just made about it. It's going to be really difficult for them to try and replace him for that exact point, because the next manager who comes in knows about the 600 million quid.
Yeah.
And knows.
Yeah.
He's a ready success.
Yeah, yeah, I want to leave my legacy. That's give me right. some of it.
I need an underdog too.
What about Leicester? Leicester haven't started the best this Premier League season, but we expected so much from them because of last season. It's a point for them nonetheless. They need to start finding the back of the net. Vardy obviously firing blanks at the moment, but they've kept Mahrez, they've signed a few players. Their side has pretty much stayed the same from last season. What do you suspect is ahead for them this year?
I suspect they're being found out, and they've lost Kante, who's a very important cog for them. But you can't stand still in the Premier League. I think I'm right in saying you don't even get a full season sometimes. You know, they've got to change and adapt quite quickly.
What do you reckon, Sagi? Do you think that they will? Is 16th a good position for them this season?
Yeah, if they stay up, seriously, if they stay up, I think they've done well, and I mean that. Again, I've been wrong before, I could be wrong again, but just because I think last year, that we're all probably thinking similar to the majority of the managers in the Premier League, they're going to cave, they're going to fold, and they didn't. This year, they've gone, wow, they've sustained it and won the league. Now it's now we know how to set up against them. And I was screaming at the TV in the European Championships as well. You need a goal, and you stick a Vardy on when you need a little bit of guile and creativity. Mm. You know, when somebody's defending really deeply and you stick him on, he hasn't got the craft or the cleverness or the ability to unlock a defence. He's an over the top, or he's win it off a centre half, shift it, smash it in the top corner. He's got great qualities, but if somebody just sits in, gets that bank of four, and the midfield lie deeper and block some little passes into him, he's going to struggle all season, in my opinion. So teams have worked them out. They'll do well to stay up.
Right, almost time to go. The legends are here in a few minutes' time. Just before we do go, thank you to Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap. Neil Sang, football agent. But Paul Manning, tell me very quickly, we've got about 60 seconds. In fact, we're probably less than that. If I want to go and watch the City of Liverpool FC and I want to get involved, how do I do it?
Get involved, go online, buy a membership, be a shareholder, have a say in the club. Come and watch a match at Delta Taxi Stadium, Vestey Road, Bootle. £5 for adults, concessions £2. Children under 15 are free. Bring as many of them as you want with
Brilliant.
Them. We love having the kids at the football and seeing them in the kits.
And with regards to the run in the league, top of the league, 4 out of 4.
Top of the league, 4 out of 4.
What do you reckon? Are you happy enough? 5 out of 5?
5 out of 5. Well, Blackpool on Saturday away, and then Bank Holiday Monday at Delta Taxi Stadium at home to Everton LR. Hopefully it'll be 6 out of 6 there.
Right, Sang, you're going to get down, you're going to have a look and see
the
situation.
Yeah, definitely will. I'll give Paul any support you need from me. That's a given.
Right, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me. I will be back with you tomorrow. We'll do it all over again for full time. Thanks again to Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap, Neil Sang, football agent, and Paul Manning as well. Make sure you stick with us. Right, the legends are coming up next. And it means that you can get your questions into the lads at Radio City Talk. Give them a buzz. I will see you back here nice and fresh tomorrow between 4 and 7. 3 and 7. I nearly gave myself an hour off there. Listen, the boys are next. Have a wonderful evening from me, Connor Phillips. Behave yourself.